prayer. To make this subject plain, let us first consider the steps by which a young man prays his way through college. 1. Recognition. Any young man who, of his own volition, registers in a college for a course with an intelligent sense of what he is doing, recognizes that the college administers to its students a body of knowledge, and that this knowledge is in existence, ready to be administered before the student goes there. The young man does not expect any knowledge, any facts or laws to be created for his special benefit. Moreover, if he stops to think, he recognizes that neither this college, nor any other, nor all of them combined, have any monopoly of the facts and laws which they teach. All these facts and laws are just as much present in any man's home as they are in any college, and a knowledge of them could be gained in any man's home. The college is simply a more convenient place in which to gain this knowledge, because the college arranges the knowledge in the right order of presentation and parcels it out in daily portions of the proper amount for the student to master, and gives him guidance and discipline which he could not get at home, at least not without a very competent tutor. He could do the work at home, though not so easily. 2. Desire. Having recognized that the college has a body of knowledge to administer, the student, to succeed, must desire that knowledge. If he goes to college with the right purpose, he does not go for the buildings, nor for the faculty, nor for the amusements, but with a great desire for a knowledge of the facts and laws which he has recognized to be already in existence. 3. Appropriation through concentration and drill. Recognition and desire are fundamental to the young man's gaining the body of knowledge which the college administers, but they are not sufficient. To succeed, the student must, each day, concentrate his consciousness upon the daily portion of the facts and laws allotted to him in the various branches which he is studying. Nor is it sufficient for him to study each fact and law until he clearly sees that it is true. He may have to spend considerable labor to do even this, but he must do more. He must go over and over these facts and laws and drill them into his memory, into his consciousness, else he will not have command of them, either at examination time, or in his succeeding lessons, or when he needs them to do practical work. The average college student drills the facts and laws in any subject into his mind sufficiently to enable him to have command of them until he has passed the examinations on that subject and on related subjects. But how few of the facts and laws taught in a college course does the average student drill into his consciousness so thoroughly that he has a lifelong command of them, so that he can make instant use of them at any time when it would suit his convenience or pleasure to do so. Only of the facts and laws of which he has gained an ineradicable and ready-on-demand knowledge can he be said to have gained an absolute mastery. During the process of concentration and drill, the student has obstacles to contend with. In the first place, he has to overcome the inertia of ignorance, the difficulty of seeing and understanding the subject matter which he is studying. But with many, an even greater difficulty is to rule out distracting thoughts and keep the consciousness fixed with continuity, hours at a time, upon the subjects being studied. The young man who cannot, during his study hours, keep thoughts of the dance he went to the night before, or of the theater party he is going to on Saturday night, or of the next week's football match out of his mind for the most part, will not make much of a success in college. The difficulty of doing this is often very great, but most students do it in spite of the difficulty. Distracting thoughts incident to disease of more or less severity, homesickness, anxiety over money matters, and many others, also have to be sternly ruled out of the mind in order to study successfully, and many accomplish this task. 4. Application. Nothing so fixes facts and laws learned in theory in the consciousness in such a way as to give a mastery of them as an application of them as fast as learned to practical conditions. And the best colleges attend to it, that their students shall be induced to make practical application of their theoretical knowledge to the largest possible extent. This not only helps them while in college, but fits them for work in the world. The student who properly attends to the elements of recognition, desire, appropriation, and application in connection with the body of knowledge which the college is administering will, without the slightest doubt, graduate from the college in due time and with high honors. And if he properly attends to these elements all through his college course, with reference to that body of knowledge, he has daily maintained an attitude of prayer, when prayer is rightly understood, for true prayer always includes the elements above mentioned. It includes desire, but it never includes an expectation of or an asking for any change in the objects of desire, or in that which is addressed in prayer. It recognizes that all the change must take place in the one who is praying, lifting him from ignorance to knowledge, from bondage to freedom, and from evil to good. Now let us consider how it works out on a higher and more important field of endeavor. What practically all well-meaning people in the world are striving for is the attainment of holiness, health, and plenty. In other words, harmony. Religious people recognize that the source of these is God, and that it is a duty as well as a privilege to make these things a subject of prayer. What is the proper process? It is important to know, lest we should ask and have not, because we ask amiss. 1. Recognition. Holiness, health, harmony, strength, and plenty are laws of God. They are the eternal manifestations of His being. Since God is omnipresent, these manifestations are omnipresent. And since He is infinite, these manifestations are infinite and inexhaustible and are ever at hand. So we should never expect God or ask Him to create any holiness, health, or supply for us, or in any way to change Himself or His laws. If we do so, we shall ask amiss. But we should recognize that God has already provided for us all good, and has placed it nearer to us than the air we breathe, as near to every man as are the facts of the multiplication table, which are at hand, ready to be learned and appropriated wherever a man is. This is what Jesus meant when he said, "And therefore I say unto you, have faith that whatever you ask for in prayer is already granted you, and you will find that it will be." 20th Century New Testament, Mark 11, verse 24. 2. Desire. Without desire for holiness, health, and plenty, and without desiring them from their only true source, God, we shall have no more success in attaining them than would a college student who, though attending college, had no real desire for the knowledge there administered. To say that we desire is not sufficient. The desire must be real. Said Jesus, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." On page 6 of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes, "The danger from audible prayer is that it may lead us into temptation. By it, we may become involuntary hypocrites, uttering desires which are not real, and consoling ourselves in the midst of sin with the recollection that we have prayed over it, or mean to ask forgiveness at some later day." 3. Appropriation through concentration and drill. We are born as ignorant of true holiness, health, and supply, and of their source, as we are of arithmetic, language, or chemistry. And we shall never gain a mastery of the harmony of life in its various phases with any less effort or in any very different manner than we gain a mastery of the forms of worldly knowledge taught in school and college. If we wish to gain real possession of holiness, health, and plenty, we must concentrate our thought upon them and upon their relation to God until we understand what they really are. But simply theoretical understanding is far from being sufficient. Having seen and understood what these forms of harmony are, and that they belong to us in the same sense that the facts of the multiplication table belong to us, if we are willing to put forth the requisite effort to gain them, it next behooves us to hold our thought to and upon the fact that harmony, in its various phases, is the law of God and is really the law of our being, and hold it there consecutively by the hour, rigorously excluding all other thoughts, just as the child holds his thought to and upon the multiplication table, with repetition after repetition, and application upon application, in order to absorb it indelibly into his consciousness. During this process of concentration and drill, our greatest obstacles are intruding thoughts, trying to distract our attention, temptations of sinful desire, thoughts of pleasure, innocent enough in themselves, but out of place during our period of prayer, feelings of fear, anxiety, worry, feelings of pain or weakness, thoughts along a score of lines opposite to the law of harmony which we are trying to master. In order for rapid growth, all such distracting thoughts must be sternly ruled out of our consciousness for some considerable consecutive period of each day, and as much as possible during all the day, in order that our thoughts and feelings may be consciously and determinedly fastened upon harmony in its various manifestations, until we have permanently absorbed it into our consciousness, or identified our consciousness with it. In this connection, we may with profit recall such counsel as follows. Work out your own salvation with watchful care. Remember, it is God who in His kindness is at work within you, enabling you both to will and to work. Philippians 2:12-13, 20th Century New Testament. What I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. Mark 13:37. Pray without ceasing. 1 Thessalonians 5:17. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Galatians 6:9. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Isaiah 28:10. Stand, porter, at the door of thought, admitting only such conclusions as you wish realize in bodily results, you will control yourself harmoniously. When the condition is present which you say induces disease, whether it be air, exercise, heredity, contagion, or accident, then perform your office as porter and shut out these unhealthy thoughts and fears. Exclude from mortal mind the offending errors. The issues of pain or pleasure must come through mind, and like a watchman forsaking his post, we admit the intruding belief, forgetting that through divine help we can forbid this entrance. Science and Health, page 392. Hold thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thoughts. Science and Health, page 261. 4. Application. Nothing so quickly and so thoroughly gives us a mastery of the law of harmony in its various phases, after we theoretically understand what it is, as its constant application to the problems of daily living. As above indicated, until we have thoroughly accomplished our tasks, we should set aside some portion of each day for concentrated and consecutive direction of our thought to and upon the law of harmony, even as the college student has his periods of consecutive study. But in addition to this, we should make use of our knowledge that harmony really is the law and the power of being to cast out of our consciousness feelings of fear, worry, doubt, sin, and pain at the very moment that these intruders try to gain entrance. If any of these forms of error seem to have gained permanent lodgment in our consciousness, as in the case of chronic sin or disease, we may well contend with these more especially during our periods of consecutive work or prayer. But throughout the day, we should apply our knowledge of harmony to the prompt ejection of any feelings of discord along new or unusual lines, which we detect springing up in our minds. This will be a most valuable application of what we are learning and striving for. Most people have really acquired a mastery of the fundamentals of arithmetic. They could stand an examination at any time, at a moment's notice. If any ordinary problem presents itself in their business, they have immediate command of the knowledge with which to solve it. They do not have to consult a book or to refresh their memory. They have no fear that the requisite knowledge is not there. When they have reached this stage, they do not have to study these fundamentals of arithmetic any more or make any conscious effort with regard to them. They have merely to use the knowledge when occasion presents itself. They have so assimilated this form of knowledge that they do not hunger or thirst for it any more, since it springs up in them an inexhaustible well of water, ready for instant use. Whoever recognizes that harmony, holiness, health, plenty is the fact of being and is ever at hand, eternal, changeless, and inexhaustible, the perpetual manifestation of God, and whoever desires that harmony in all its manifestations with his whole heart, and whoever will concentrate his thought and feeling upon this law, and hold his mind to it, and drill it into his consciousness, and make continued application of it with a persistence, watchfulness, patience, and assiduity that the average person has spent upon the fundamentals of arithmetic, such a person may be sure of attaining the same mastery of holiness, health, and plenty. Then he will have no fear of losing them. He will not have to strive so hard for them as he once did. He will merely have to use his demonstrable knowledge of them occasionally to rule out discord, just as the average person has to use his knowledge of arithmetic occasionally to solve a problem, but he will have no more fear that he will be unable to overcome discord than the average person entertains a fear that he cannot reckon up a grocery bill on occasion. A person who has acquired such a demonstrable and ready-on-demand knowledge of the harmony of God in its various manifestations has fed upon the bread of life. And to him the following words of Jesus properly apply: He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. Whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Matter makes itself known to us by the testimony of the senses. We see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it. But observe that, after all, this is indirect testimony. These impressions are, all of them, simply brain impressions. We see, hear, smell, taste, touch in our consciousness only. We cannot assert, therefore, that matter exists apart from this consciousness. Science has nothing to say about the ultimate nature of matter. Science studies matter simply as a fact of human experience. We are not concerned, in physics, with what things really are, but solely with their properties and behavior. Physics neither offers nor seeks an explanation of the universe. It leaves all such problems to metaphysics. From the Textbook on Physics by Henderson and Woodhull of Columbia University.